gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, the home of free speech and the home of Christmas. And no better way than to support both free speech and Christmas than by offering a Christmas present to the free speech champion, RBN. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button and send shekels. Also, get your stocking out. If your stocking's got the USB port, then you can plug it right into your computer. Download that co-certified app directly into the stocking of somebody that you love, and they will be able to use the co-certified app on their cell phone. That's how it works. It's that simple. And today, we have with us Mark Dankoff. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, it's good to be with you. We have a number of key items up on the big board today at nationalbugle.com. I'll mention just a couple of these. We will be getting back more specifically to the whole issue of James P. Duffy's book, Lindbergh versus Roosevelt, The Rivalry That Divided America, next week.
Wow.
But today's show is not exactly totally divorced from that theme. I'll simply mention another news for our listeners who will be listening specifically to our ongoing development of the Duffy book, that John J. Dwyer has published The New American on Duffy's book. It's under other news on our big board, and it's entitled FDR versus Lindbergh, Setting the Record Straight. So that's good preparatory reading for next week. Andrew Carrington Hitchcock of UK Eurofolk Radio contacted me today to indicate that our April 2007 interview with Tex Mars for RBN Live, I talked to Tex extensively at that time. That show is over 12 years old, and yet the UK Eurofolk Radio chose to rebroadcast that show today as a tribute to the late Tex Mars, who recently passed away. So people who want to listen to my interview with Tex from April 2007 on RBN can do it today if they go to our podcast section. Now to some of the stories that we're going to be focusing on more deliberately today. There are several under foreign policy that are critical. Tim Corso from Sputnik reports that the U.S. is returning to six previously abandoned bases in Syria. Stephen F. Cohen.
Who's in charge of our foreign policy, by the way?
Well, who knows who's in charge of it at this point? As Trump is saying one thing, obviously the deep state and the U.S. Military at a higher level is saying quite another. I think that would seem to be the implication
of this. And this is just one more way the Jew d'etat works. We know that Trump has three times announced a pullout of troops from Syria. And then we know, at least consciously, he has announced that, he was persuaded to take the oil, leave the troops in to secure the oil. But, what we're saying, this begs the question. But this is what the Jew d'etat does. This is what the impeachment does. It gets them all distracted, and then the military and the CIA that can run around with no oversight. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No problem. And that's exactly what the Syrian thing is all about. Tasnim News Agency has a post up there. U.S. sends new troop deployments into northeast Syria oil fields. We have an editorial remark there. The Ron Paul Institute, of course, is keeping an eye on this U.S. military buildup once again in Syria and in the Middle East generally. We put up a profile that I think has been up there about a week on Al-Tanf in Syria. That comes to us from the International Crisis Group. Now, here is a very, very key story. And I know, Dr. Slattery, that you're a fan of Dr. Mm-hmm. Stephen F. Cohen.
Sure.
His post on Lou Rockwell, I think yesterday, is entitled "How Impeachment is Escalating the New U.S.-Russian Cold War." And I believe there is a link on that page to Dr. Cohen's recent appearance on the John Batchelor Show.
Yeah, it's divided into two parts. Yeah, so like about 18 minutes each part. Yeah, you can listen to that. It's good listening and very insightful.
Yes. And in terms of the biggest stories that maybe we will take a look at after the break, we are told or reminded by Whitney Webb in March of 2017 in Mint Press News, which she reposted again today to contextualize this impeachment circus. She reminds us that Julian Assange reported then that Hillary Clinton and U.S. intelligence were pushing a Pence takeover of the U.S. presidency.
Really?
I responded on Twitter by sending out the cover story of this October 25th Newsweek, which is promoting the idea of the possibility of a President Pence, showing him in his dapper suit and his snow-white hair with his hand over his heart. This would
Looking like that guy from the Johnny Quest cartoon, not Professor Quest, but you know, the dashing sidekick who used to like make out with girls James Bond style in like a life raft and that type of thing. Not exactly very Pence like, but still, I mean, they're the spitting image of each other.
And that story from March 2017 in Mint Press News by Whitney Webb, I think is absolutely critical to what we are doing today, as along with the Stephen F. Cohen post, we attempt to contextualize what is really going on in this impeachment circus. Now that the House has impeached Trump, Pelosi is playing games and will not refer that case over to the Senate, as the Constitution requires her to do. She is obviously trying to extract all kinds of concessions from the Senate, including being very worried about who the Senate might call as witnesses.
Yeah, so there's that. Do you also think that maybe they want to keep it in their back pocket until they can manufacture a new crisis? Because, you know, I mean, calling witnesses alone, that's not going to get them 67 senators to vote for this. But, you know, manufacturing a crisis, maybe a Hollywood Access style tape or something.
Yes.
Manufacture some new outrage, and maybe they could even get him removed.
Well, yes, and this is interesting how this is impacting the so-called mainstream elements of evangelicalism. We are told that the so-called evangelical magazine Christianity Today is now calling on President Trump to give it up. This story was particularly influenced by one Jim Wallis, W-A-L-L-I-S. Who is Jim Wallis? Longtime editor of Sojourners magazine. He has always been a left of center political person in the evangelical movement, going all the way back to his days as something of a rebel at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. So obviously this Christianity Today is no longer the publication that it was when it was founded by the great and late Carl F. H. Henry. Christianity Today has been murkily swimming in center to left of center waters for a very long period of time. And of course, people like Jim Wallis are not questioning anything related to this impeachment process or to the absolute vulnerability of the Bidens in terms of the Burisma situation in the Ukraine. Neither is Christianity Today taking a close look at who facilitated this illegal coup d'etat in Ukraine in February of 2014. So there is an element within evangelicalism. We might call Christianity Today now the Newsweek of the American evangelical movement. Its ideological moorings now are extremely suspicious. That's not something we have up in the big board at present, but I can certainly put it there as we watch the way that this whole corrosive process continues. Virginia lawmakers, under election and politics, we have at least four other stories that may play a role in our conversation after the first break. Virginia lawmakers threatened Second Amendment sanctuaries with the National Guard. That comes to us from Daisy Luther at Lou Rockwell. Eric Stryker from Russia Insider reports that Trump's executive order protecting Jews actually matters.
Yeah. Why Eric Stryker, friend of the show, by the way. He's been on this show before, and it's good to see him reprinted in Russia Insider. Of course, he has his own.
Yes, very critically important that he be reprinted there, especially on this story. This is one that our listeners at RBN will want to take a look at nationalbugle.com, even as we speak here. A so-called Ahab.
And by the way, I just wanted to point out, if people like Eric Stryker, they're fans, he has a new website called national-justice.com, I'm pretty sure.
.com.
Yeah.
And I know
that .net is for losers.
Yes. When Russia Insider has posted him, they make reference to national justice. So I'm glad that we got that before our RBN.
Where we have National Bugle without a hyphen.
Because correct. Hyphens we're are just for nationalbugle.com.
I won't say hyphens are for losers because Eric Stryker's got a hyphen, so I won't say it.
Yes. Very good. Two more stories, and then maybe we'll be ready to continue or to go to the first break. Today's Jewish billionaires are much worse than 19th century barons. Don't give up your guns just yet. That comes to us from Ahab at Russia Insider. That is a critically important story to contextualize the union unrest in the United States in the 19th century against the Carnegies and Rockefellers of that time, and how different those oligarchs were, those barons were, from what we are up against today, but how important the Second Amendment is in both cases. And Ahab at Russia Insider explains that this whole movement towards squashing the vast numbers of grassroots American out there, Americans out there, is tied, obviously, to these Jewish billionaires, and at the same time, they are tied to this whole issue of the destruction of the Second Amendment and to gun confiscation.
Hey, I got a question. So, you know, Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie famously, he built Carnegie Hall. He built libraries all over the country. So he built libraries. How about like Sergey Brin and Larry Page of Google? Are there going to be you can't name censorship out? Like what are they going to do? It's like the Larry Page censorship institution. I mean,
exactly. And this article points out some of those key differences between people like Carnegie in the 19th century in terms of their cultural presuppositions and their demographic makeup. As opposed to what we are now dealing with in a 21st century context.
Well, that's a question for you, Reverend Dankoff, a question for you. So it's been said that Carnegie and some other billionaires of days gone by, late in their life, they started thinking, hey, wait a minute, how am I going to get to heaven? I've got some black marks against me in terms of, say, labor relations with my steel workers. What am I going to do? And that this idea of maybe trying to buy their way into heaven or whatever, that they built themselves a massive legacy of philanthropy. How's that going to work with like Sergey Brin and Larry Page and you know, these others who have made an entire career not just off of making a fortune, but of really suppressing people.
Exactly, and I think that's the critical importance of this article, because Ahab at Russia Insider goes into this and compares Carnegie and Rockefeller with these individuals that you have just mentioned in regard to the critical differences. There are some similarities in the vulnerability of average Americans to both entities in these different centuries, but there are also some critical differences where Ahab seems to be saying that these people that we are up against today are much worse, and that these individuals today have a level of ruthlessness that even Carnegie and Rockefeller did not have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Couple other stories here. Tyler Durden from Zero Hedge reports that camera footage of Epstein's first suicide attempt has disappeared, and no one knows why. I suspect
it's just a coincidence.
We know why.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence. These things happen, Goy.
That's right. Just a coincidence there. David J. Garrow from the Wall Street Journal reports that the Steele report is multiple evidence of hearsay upon hearsay. I think we get that one fairly quickly. And here's one more before we either talk about a specific story or go.
Well, hearsay upon hearsay regarding what?
Well, hearsay upon hearsay in regard to what's in the Steele report.
I'm sorry. I missed that part. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no problem. So that whole business of the Steele report, it is nothing more, Garrow says, than multiple evidence of hearsay upon hearsay.
So here's my question. Because, you know, what you hear on Fox News is that, well, ultimately it was, you know, Russian lies, Kremlin lies, and that the, you know, Hillary's the real Russia collaborist. You know, it's kind of this Some of the young kids talk about DR3, which is like Democrats are the real racists. But, you know, on Hannity, it's like, no, Democrats are the real Russia collaborators. They are the real sellouts to Russia. You hear this. But what Professor Cohen says is that, no, this information in the Steele report wasn't made up by Russians. It wasn't Russian misinformation. It was CIA misinformation. This comes from John Brennan and the CIA, ultimately. And it's hearsay upon hearsay, but it ultimately comes from John Brennan, not from some Russian sources.
And as we have said before on the show, linked to the Fusion Group, Fusion GPS Group, which in turn is linked to Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee. And, of course, that dovetails with Whitney Webb's story from 2 years ago, which she's come out with again, in regard to Assange's explanation of all of this in terms of Clinton and the deep state working behind the scenes to bring Mike Pence into the American presidency if necessary, so that these endless wars for globalist and Zionist interests might continue. A couple other things, and then we can either zero in on a specific story or go to the first break. Here's one that'll be an uplifting story for you at Christmas time, folks. Russia Today, homeless in Seattle? City officials will put on a transgender strip show to lift your spirits. That comes to us from RT today. That's for real, folks.
That sounds like torture. I mean, like, if you're already down on your luck and you're homeless and you're confronted with a transgender strip show, I mean...
That's right. The city of Seattle, the city council is so concerned about homeless in Seattle that they're at least going to put on a transgender strip show for those who are homeless. And then we may have mentioned this one last week, I'm not sure, but it definitely bears mentioning again. Pete Buttigieg's father was a Marxist professor who lauded the Communist Manifesto. This comes to us from the Washington Examiner. The key thing here, folks, if you Google this, this has been reported responsibly upon, even by mainstream media sources. This is the link between the Italian communist theoretician Antonio Gramsci, his views on subverting the United States from within via moral and cultural infiltration, the fact that the senior Buttigieg was a Gramsci scholar and belonged to the International Gramsci Society, and then, of course, Mayor Pete and his Jewish financial enablers bring the 21st century version of this to us in terms of an avowed practicing homosexual with all of the Jewish cultural Marxist views, bringing all that to the forefront in a Buttigieg candidacy that seems to be a combination of the fealty to the multinational corporate interests that govern the American economy and the American people, and all of that being wedded, of course, to the cultural Marxist outlook of Buttigieg's father and also Mr. Antonio Gramsci.
Yeah,
so that's... that's where that sits.
And I'm not an expert on Marxism, and not an expert on Antonio Gramsci. He had been imprisoned during World War I, and then wound up dying in prison at a reasonably young age. I will say I found his ideas a lot more interesting than Marx's ideas, and the one that sticks out is the idea of what do you call it? Not cultural hegemony. Some sort of hegemony is like a hegemony of ideas, whereby you don't need to have heavy-handed, violent security apparatus if you've got a hegemony of ideas and people. You basically get people to censor themselves. If people can censor themselves, or can be basically brainwashed into censoring themselves, then you don't need the heavy-handed operations. Anyway, we're coming up on the break, and I certainly didn't explain that very well, but it probably is a lot more relevant to our situation today. But we will be back on the other side of the break with more.
Make the world go away. Say the things you used to say.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff. Almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And make the world go away.
Welcome back to the show. All right, Mark. So I know we have gone through a lot of articles on the big board, but maybe not all. And maybe you can illuminate this Gramsci thing a little bit for us.
Well, I think the important thing there, before I read something from Ahab's Post, a Russian insider, that I think will help to contextualize today's show, which is a combination of gun control, a combination of ongoing globalist attempts to bring Mike Pence into the American presidency in the way in which Assange prophesied that several years ago, and the way in which our foreign policy obviously is going adrift between some of Trump's tendencies to pull back from some of these involvements, and the way in which the president in turn seems to be constantly overruled by our national security masters. But in terms of Gramsci specifically, I think the important thing here, and Pat Buchanan has talked about this, is that Gramsci understood apparently when he was talking about this in the 1930s that there's no way in terms of what Gramsci understood of the international communist movement of that time that it could possibly prevail over the United States economically and militarily. Gramsci took the tack that if the international communist movement was ever to succeed, that the United States would have to be subverted from within. When we talk about subverting it from within, Gramsci understood that there were certain institutions that would be specifically useful in the infiltration of American culture. I think he was thinking of the entertainment industry and the educational industry specifically, in the way in which, certainly since that time, we have seen this happen in regard to what has been a cultural revolution in the United States in the last half century, on issues like LGBTQ and gay marriage and abortion on demand at any stage of the pregnancy. That's where we seem to be as a culture now. That is anything but where we were 50 years ago. And it would seem that Gramsci was taking the long-term approach, the incremental approach, understanding that the movement at that time, the movement that he represented, could not achieve all of what it wanted to achieve in terms of the moral and cultural infiltration of the United States in a handful of years or even a decade, but that he was taking the longer-term approach and foreseeing that in decades to come, if the international communist movement, the cultural Marxist movement, was to be successful, it would have to be in it for the long haul and to do so incrementally. They wouldn't get everything that they wanted right away. There would be too much public opposition expressed in the beginning to what it is that they are up to or and have been up to. But in the incremental department, this has been creeping up on the American public for many, many years now. And suffice it to say, it seemed to accelerate in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And since that time, we obviously have come to a point with the Roe versus Wade decision in January of 1973. And then the Obergefell decision on gay marriage on June 26th, 2015, I believe, that these were the two watershed moments in bringing to pass a brand of cultural Marxism as mainstream American social and cultural thought as we approach the year 2020. So from the 1930s of Gramsci to the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, to the decision, the Obergefell decision in June of 2015, this long-range approach in the passage of years just between Roe versus Wade and the Obergefell decision have proven Gramsci absolutely right in terms of how you infiltrate a society, how you weaken it, and how you basically take over its fundamental institutions, where in this case, media and the whole business of the educational institutions, hence things like the National Education Association's gathering here in Texas, in Houston, this past summer, which was promoting drag queens and drag queen readers in American public schools and libraries for grade school-aged children and this sort of thing. This would have been unthinkable even 20 years ago, much less 50 years ago. But this is where we are now, with nary a shot being fired in the cultural front. We have now also reached a point, of course, where you can have a situation where all kinds of things require parental supervision of children, right? Except when it comes to abortion, except when it comes to gay sex ed in the public educational circles, even in the lowest elementary grades, or when it comes to the whole issue of having the right to make a decision on a gender change, that an increasing amount of this has involved the complete surrendering and jettisoning of parental rights in the idea that children can be making these kinds of decisions with the help of a Marxist-infiltrated educational establishment and an infiltrated judicial establishment, with parental rights absolutely being abrogated in these areas, which gets right back to Gramsci. All of a sudden, these children are no longer the responsibility of their parents in a traditional setting. All of a sudden, these children are at the mercy of the state educational apparatus and the culturally Marxist news media that shapes these kids from the earliest age and basically has these children being molded to have attitudes and to be making decisions that might be completely contrary to the to their parents' wishes, their parents' religious values, and the religious value of whatever particular religious grouping they happen to belong to.
Well, we're
this is where the state becomes supreme, of course.
Right, and we're up on the break. We'll be right back.
Any time you're feeling lonely, any time you're feeling blue.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last 2 decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendovite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The 7 herbs in Extendovite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendovite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendovite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
If you say you want me back again, that's the time I'll come back home to you.
And we are back, and Mark, I understand you have something you want to read from the Ahab article about these Jewish billionaires.
Yeah, this is something that I think is a critical read for us today who are listening to this show on RBN. If you go to nationalbugle.com, this one is posted under elections and politics, I believe. Someone by the name of Ahab, which I assume to be a pseudonym, is writing that today's Jewish billionaires are much worse than 19th century robber barons. Don't give up your guns just yet. What is in this article? Well, we won't be reading the whole thing on the air, but you'll get a bit of a flavor with the first couple of paragraphs. He says that recent events in Virginia, now keep in mind, folks, Virginia is a southern state. Virginia was the home of the old Confederacy in the midway point of the 19th century, right?
Right.
But recent events in Virginia are teaching rural and working class white Americans a lesson about what they can expect when they are electorally outnumbered and replaced in their own state. Gun control is the order of the day, and in spite of vocal protests and city council meetings and public forums around the state, Second Amendment rights will soon be as dead in Virginia as First Amendment rights already are in the city of Charlottesville. Some believe the issue of gun rights is simply a harmless fixation of right-wing boomers, preppers, and libertarian cranks. They are wrong. This issue strikes right to the heart of the biggest political and economic transformation in the United States in the past 40 years. The growth of monopolistic corporate power over the lives of the little people. Or to put it more accurately, listen to this sentence, folks, to put it more accurately, the domination of billionaire Jews over the lives of impoverished, socially disintegrated and debt-slaved white America. During the late 19th and early 20th century, gigantic capitalists during the Gilded Age presided over another era of big business tyranny over the lives of ordinary Americans. Brutal as they were, now listen to this, folks, brutal as they were, those capitalists were mostly white men who still shared some cultural and racial heritage with the masses of working people. Business magnates such as Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller oppressed their workers, but they made their fortunes from commodities such as oil and steel, the stuff of which built the growth and transformation of America into an industrialized power. They felt enough residual affiliation with the cultural glories of old Europe to establish magnificent libraries, concert halls, and museums. A few enlightened industrialists, such as Henry Ford, even went so far as to make the improvement of the lives of workers a priority and to warn the people against the growing financial power of the international Jew. Ford's warnings were prophetic. We are living in the second great Gilded Age in America, but the new Jewish oligarchs of the 21st century differ from their predecessors in several important ways. For one, they mostly built their fortunes through parasitic rather than productive sources of wealth, such as usury or real estate speculation. They share no racial or cultural affinity with the majority of Americans, and to the extent they patronize culture and the arts, they only support a consumer mass culture also controlled by rich Jews. Mm-hmm. Rather than enlighten and edify the masses, this popular culture of pornography, hip-hop, and Marvel movies is designed to titillate only the most base instincts, to erode the social fabric, distract the people, and render them docile and compliant. But one thing the Jewish oligarchs of today share with the robber barons of old, a shared antipathy toward the people's right to keep and bear arms. During the great labor wars of the early 20th century, it was the ability, listen to this, Bernie Sanders, it was the ability of organized labor to fight back with rifles against the armed thugs and corrupt law enforcement officials of the capitalists, which kept them from being completely overwhelmed. From the great railroad strikes, the Colorado labor wars, to the battles of Homestead, Matawan, and Blair Mountain, striking workers were able to resist the iron heel of the oligarchs only because they were armed with rifles, which could hit back against the deadly force of the mercenaries. This was right in line with the original purpose of the Second Amendment, to secure the lives and liberty of the people against tyranny, a point missed by so many gun control advocates who sheepishly bleat against quote-unquote military-style assault weapons. Folks, as we read through this, there is one other additional reminder in this paragraph, and then we can just go on to discuss from there. Ahab says that the working men of early 20th century America were made of stiffer stuff than today's emasculated suburbanites. The corporate bugmen and suburban career women of our modern capitalism have been socially engineered for docility, social conformity, and cowardice. So when these feeble, degenerate specimens combine their votes with the rapidly increasing third world immigrant horde who neither respect nor understand any tradition of independent gun ownership, they form a voting bloc, which can overwhelm even the proud traditions of a state such as Virginia. The abuses of the giant capitalists of the 19th century were kept in check by the organized labor power of the working white people, which was supported by the Second Amendment. Today, organized labor has been broken by forcing women into the workforce, by diversity quotas, by the largest influx of immigrant labor in American history, and by a co-opted labor movement which pushes an anti-white, anti-family, and anti-Second Amendment liberal agenda. In the same way, says Ahab, Jewish billionaires such as George Soros and Sheldon Adelson pull the strings to subvert the genuine people's movements of both the left and the right in America, so do Jewish billionaires like Michael Bloomberg openly advocate for the total disarmament of the American people. Now, Ahab goes on to discuss what happened with the Occupy Wall Street movement and the way in which that was crushed both by Bloomberg and by our friendly Hebrew mayor in Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. It goes on to say that that was probably the last gasp of any legitimate organized movement for any degree of freedom on the American left, and that this goes on at the very end of the article to say that only time will tell whether enough whites in states like Virginia wake up from the conservative delusion of capitalist individualism to realize they are being targeted both as a class and as a race. And that only the socialism of class and the nationalism of race will give them the strength to drive back the creeping tyranny of the Jewish oligarchs. So that is an incredible article originally posted at Stryker's National Justice. It now reappears at Charles Bousman's Russia Insider. That one's entitled, Today's Jewish Billionaires Are Much Worse Than the 19th Century Robber Barons. Don't give up your guns just yet.
Are you saying that's from Stryker?
Well, this is from someone who calls himself Ahab. But it was originally posted on Eric Stryker's site.
All right. Okay. Very good. Very good. You know, I think one of the defining features of Jewish power is the Jewish tendency, which is may not be universal among Jews, but it is more prevalent among Jews than any other group I could name, to be concerned with Jewish group interests, to wake up thinking what's good for the Jews, to be concerned about to look at an issue and think, well, is it good for the Jews? I think they do this much more often. And I think that because of that very strong tendency, which is probably reinforced in the religion, reinforced in the culture, perhaps reinforced in the genetics. I don't know, but, you know, who knows? But it's certainly reinforced in the culture and in the religion. Because of that, they don't... And there is a lot of Jewish, you know, there is organized Jewry. I'm not denying that there's organized Jewry. But there's really not a need for one centralized command structure, you know, because it's a lot of people, I think, like to think of the power dynamics of the world in kind of in terms of a military-style structure where you've got, like, a five-star general at the top, and he's issuing orders, and they trickle down, and then the corporals and the privates dutifully carry out instructions that were handed down through a command chain. But if you have people who maybe have diverse ways of looking at things, but at the end of the day are concerned about a particular group interest, I don't think you need to have that type of formal or concrete decision-making process or command structure that people just tend to fall into various roles. And so you'll have some people who just, some Jews who tend to fall into a role of, spinning a libertarian ideology that's actually good for the Jews because it emphasizes amongst people who might resist them, don't act as a group, individualism, it's, Atlas Shrugged, that type of thing. And others who without the need for instruction, take up the cause of cultural Marxism and this and that. And because of this, they function really, really well as a group in a way that that we don't.
Exactly. And I think certainly you could argue that there are a number of reasons for that, it seems to me. And I think of this going all the way back to when I was a third-party candidate in the U.S. Senate race in Delaware, running on the Constitution Party line then. It's notable that this was the year before 9/11, or I would have had a lot more to campaign on in a later year, a post-9/11 year. But nonetheless, I ran a halfway decent campaign on no money and got the combined vote totals of Howard Phillips and Pat Buchanan that year, who were the presidential standard bearers in the Constitution Party and the Reform Party in that particular election year. But suffice it to say that when you look at this whole situation, when you start talking about funding, how campaigns are funded, and corporate money, and ballot access laws, and access to corporate media, this is all a part of why the opposition is so well organized and is so strong, not simply in their ability to identify as far as a so-called group interest, but the way in which, in their particular case, the identification with a group interest coincides with who it is that has a disproportionate amount of power in these particular structures in American society, much more so, I think Ahab would say, certainly than in the 19th century when Carnegie and Rockefeller were in their heyday. So that's and then when you look at our movement, one questions why it is, and I've been talking about this for years, that we have, with the Republic Broadcasting Network, the American Free Press, Wassel's Nationalist Times, Eurofolk Radio. These are just a handful of the very, very fine outlets. We've got certainly what Ron Paul does with his Liberty Report. Pat Buchanan is still a very, very effective columnist and spokesman for our wing of things politically. And yet, in terms of a concrete strategy as a group to come up with a thinking on the American right of a group interest, a group interest that's largely both racial and economic, and you certainly could add, in a generic sense, religious identification as well, although that's a little shakier in regard to the religious diversity among us in this movement. We have not been able to effectively articulate a group strategy against those who have the power and who do operate largely as a group. It's a very interesting thing to study, especially as this Ahab article talked about Occupy Wall Street. And I couldn't help but think, as I was reading through this, that what happened there, as he describes it, basically seems to be the counterpart to what happened on the American right with the Tea Party movement, where a movement which clearly goes back both to Pat Buchanan and Ron Paul, who are not quite the same ideologically, but there is where you have the paleocon influence of Buchanan, the Ron Paul with more of the paleo-libertarian emphasis. But both of those fellows, I think, the people that they influenced arguably were the real original activists in what we call the Tea Party. And those people, in turn, should have strongly identified with the institutions that I've just mentioned in our movement. RBN, the American Free Press, Wassel's The Nationalist Times, Adrian Krieg's A to Z Publications, Eurofolk Radio, and Andy Hitchcock, you know, the late Tex Mars, just naming just a few individuals and institutions that have given our people some kind of voice. And yet, when you go back and look at the Tea Party, it is a classic example of the co-optation of that movement. People were getting into that movement who represented a point of view on such things as Christian Zionism. That is not part of the thinking of Buchanan and Ron Paul, certainly. You can begin to see the way in which the effectiveness of the Tea Party movement was impacted by what I believe was a very sophisticated movement of infiltration that has not been properly studied to understand how it took place.
Yeah.
Who may have been involved, who may have financed it. But there's no question of what happened to Occupy Wall Street, largely a movement on the left, has its counterpart in what clearly was the weakening of the Tea Party movement in the United States by the infiltration of neocons and Zionists.
I think there's a real, real parallel there. Now, with the Tea Party movement, okay, it was completely co-opted, and you can see, like, Glenn Beck. I think Glenn Beck and Fox News had a huge role in that. But
yes,
you still at least have, you know, Pat Buchanan still writing. You have places like, and Ron Paul still writing. You have antiwar.com. You still have at least some kind of intellectual, ideological core of that that survived. When you think of, say, the contemporary counterparts in the left who were, you know, anti-interventionist and anti-establishment, and you think of Dennis Kucinich, Congressman Dennis Kucinich, or Ralph Nader, there's nothing, I mean, their movements, to the extent, well, there was co-optation, there's nothing left of them. Is there really anything left of that?
Not that I can see, and really when you look at the whole business of co-optation, infiltration, and so forth. I think you are absolutely correct that we still have the Buchanans, the Ron Pauls. We have antiwar.com. We have what we're doing at RBN. You've got Eurofolk Radio, American Free Press, Wassel's Nationalist Times. And
by the way, I was never part of that neocon movement, but I always saw them as kind of like kindred spirits. I was more of the Kucinich movement, but I see nothing left there. There's nothing left.
Yes, and when you that's right. And when you look at that, it is suggestive of what has happened to our overall situation, because one of the things that that I continue to insist is the case is that when you're looking,
we're up on the break, but can we continue on the other side? We'll be right back.
Well, in 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired...
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Couldn't catch 'em down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
And we are right back, and I'm sorry I had to interrupt your thought. Please continue.
Well, to me, whether you're looking at someone like Dennis Kucinich, for example, or the late James Traficant, who occasionally appeared in the American Free Press.
Represented Youngstown, Ohio.
Right, and... he died in a sad accident. Some people don't believe it was an accident. We'll never know.
His tractor tipped over.
Right. But nonetheless, when you look at someone like Kucinich or Traficant, the interesting thing is that both of those fellows, I think, had their pulse on a brand of thinking that really would have a working class brand of nationalism, and some of that is tied up with Catholicism, not all of it, but a working class sense of nationalism, both in terms of the economic interests represented by people who would vote for a James Traficant or a Dennis Kucinich, people who see that their economic interest is being threatened, people who at the same time oppose all this cultural Marxism in schools, people who at the same time oppose these insane wars for Zionist and multinational corporate interests. This, with all of that that's out there, Kucinich, Traficant, certainly the Buchanan presidential candidacies in the 90s, Ron Paul, none of that has gotten us to first base, it would seem, in terms of a larger movement politically that had power at the ballot box. And, of course, that would make for a series of probably 100 shows to really explore why that is. But when you get back to the stacking of the deck and to who it is that has stacked the deck, according to what Ahab says today, both in National Justice and in Russia Insider, it gets back to understanding the way the operation operates, but not really having, even with some of the intellectual firepower that still exists in our movement, we don't have a political strategy, and have not developed a political strategy, especially since 9/11, that would enable us to be properly represented at the ballot box.
Yeah. I want to just underscore that for a second and put it, give it right back to you. So we do have a very, very good analysis of what's going on. I think we have a very good understanding of what's going on, and you know, it goes beyond our little podcast. It goes beyond David Duke. It goes, you know, there is a great deal of understanding of what's going on, and yet we don't know how to move forward, and we don't have a political movement. We don't have a infrastructure. We don't have a strategy. Why is that?
Well, again, it is one thing, and I don't know why that is. In some respects, I know why the opposition has been so effective.
It could be because it's very, very, very difficult. How do you strategize when we got all those cards stacked against us?
There's the issue of money. There's the issue of ballot access laws, access to corporate media. I think those are the immediate explanations. But then, even within our movement, one of the things that has always amazed me is that when we have not really had, in my view, some of our best thinkers getting together completely out of the public limelight to say, okay, it's one thing to have a seminar that deals with what we know is wrong politically, economically.
We got 30 seconds.
But it's quite another thing to put together a political strategy to see that our side can actually fight this thing. We all know what's wrong, but we've got to come up with a concrete political strategy given all of the strikes are already against us. That's an area where I think is a movement we failed.
Well, maybe we can work on that. And fortunately, you'll be back again next week, won't you?
I'll be back next week, and we'll really get back to the Lindbergh-Roosevelt thing next week.
And I'll be back again with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.